You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto, and we are glad you're joining us on this Wednesday evening. Art Factora, my producer, how are you doing today, Art?
Swamped.
Yeah? Are you swamped with work?
Work and comedy.
And performing. You've been doing tons of comedy work.
I'm at the Rio Theater this Saturday. I'm at the Comedy Mix downtown all next weekend.
Are you going to keep working for me, Art, or am I going to lose you soon?
Steve, this is the last job I'm going to quit.
this one
right here, particularly.
Because all the other ones you're going to get fired from first.
I will say no to shows if it's a Wednesday night.
You should not do that.
I'll stick with you.
You should not do that.
I know which horse is going to bring me to the big money.
To the big money. Wow, we got a great show lined up today because we've got Jake Cormier is going to be joining us, going to be talking about the E3 Entertainment Expo, which almost seems like ancient history because it was a whole 2 weeks ago. And what a couple of weeks. Of course, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference last week. And then yesterday, did you follow the news on Monday, Art?
Which ones are we talking? Are we talking about the new Microsoft?
Yes. Do you know the new Microsoft what?
Oh. Starts with an S.
It's called the Surface.
That's it.
Microsoft has stepped into, they've alluded to the fact they're stepping into the tablet market. And they're bringing out two tablets, one of them based on the ARM chat platform and the other on an Intel chip. One smaller tablet, one slightly bigger. It's an interesting departure for Microsoft, Art, because here's what happened. Microsoft has always been, we build the software, you make hardware that works. And they've trusted their hardware partners to help them compete with Apple, especially in the new mobility space, where they've done it with phones, they've been doing it with their computers. And all of these manufacturers just keep coming up with ideas and throwing up the wall without really any great thought behind it, I think. And they haven't, and the result is, Apple has 80% market share in the tablet market. Microsoft is saying, we're going to do Apple. We're going to be Apple. We're going to build the hardware ourselves. We're going to make it proprietary. We're going to own the software. We're going to build the apps. We're going to make it ourselves. And that was the announcement. And it caught most of the industry, I think, unawares. I don't think many people thought that this was going to be the announcement for Microsoft. So it's a very interesting idea.
Well, you walk into like a Staples or a Future Shop, and there's the iPad, and like it's like, oh, and then there's a bunch of like, just other things that you have no idea what their name. But you look at the prices, you're thinking, well, the iPad's like $600-$700, and this thing is about the same size and might do the same thing for like $200-$300.
But we don't know.
Yeah,
because nobody's talking about it.
So.
Yeah.
Is this Microsoft Surface going to be, I guess, no price point yet?
No price point and not a lot of detail. A couple of cool things. Its physical structure has some neat characteristics. It's got a pop-out prop so that it can stand up. And it's got the most notable thing that everybody's talking about is the case, is the cover. it's a hard cover that covers it up and then flips down and is a keyboard. And everybody's going, that is cool. And I must admit, that is cool.
The case. We're talking
the
about the case.
Cover. Yeah, we're talking about the case. Huh. Now, Microsoft has called this Surface. Microsoft did a concept a year and a bit ago of what Surface might be. And they weren't talking about a tablet. But in the demo that they did, they had a coffee table that was digital. And it would change and you could manipulate things on it, and it had some features like if you had a Windows phone and you placed the phone down on the coffee table, all of a sudden all of the photos in the phone would go bloop 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 and be loaded down into the Surface coffee table.
Ooh.
See, that kind of thing. Now, if that kind of functionality is built in, if I could take my Windows phone, set it down on the screen and have it sync, for example, through Surface contact, that would be cool. But they didn't show that. They didn't talk about that. So I don't know if that's going to be there. And I guess the big question is Microsoft capable of being innovative enough and really stepping toe-to-toe with Apple? Because right now, this product is Microsoft taking the gauntlet, tossing it down at Apple's feet, saying, en garde. And in a couple of months or next quarter when we release the product. Then N-Guard. So we'll have to see how it susses out. But for me now, I'm cautiously optimistic that it'll be interesting.
What's the ETA? When do we look? Is it Christmas?
I have no idea.
It's always Christmas.
I don't think so.
I think it's a fair bet to say it'll come out right before you start looking for things for dad and geeky son.
Yeah, it could be in the fall. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how close it is. I guess, you know, it's something that we will have to see. Jay Cormier slides into this studio. He is our master of all things gaming. And I invited Jay in because last week, the E3 wrapped up?
Yeah, Electronic Entertainment Expo.
And with the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference and then Microsoft stealing the march on us, it seems so long ago, that E3. It seems like it's such yesterday's news, Jay.
It's also possible because it wasn't amazing.
It was probably the least interesting E3 that I can remember. E3 is the Entertainment Gaming Expo. It's Las Vegas, right?
Or
is
it Los Angeles now?
Los Angeles. And it's just it almost slipped by. I never got excited about any of the. Is that because E3 is so much about console gaming, really? And consoles are long in the tooth.
They're out six, 7 years now, all these Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and the Wii, you know, so they're definitely, people are like waiting for the next one.
Yeah.
And sure, Nintendo launched their new console, the Wii U, which we can get into details.
Yeah.
They actually kind of dropped the ball, many people think, with regards to how they launched it. But Xbox and PlayStation were quiet as far as their next gen, but there were rumors that, you know, they're coming. More than rumors that they're coming.
It's interesting to see Microsoft yesterday announcing the Surface, the tablet, because it does kind of dovetail. Is the future of gaming what they're calling second screen now? Is that a big part of it? So why don't you...
So either some people call it asynchronous or asymmetrical play, so where one person is playing on a tablet-type device, a screen-type device that they hold in their hands, while another player is playing on the screen in front of them, or multiple people are playing on the screen in front of them. And that's the whole explanation of the Wii U.
Okay.
So when the Wii launched, people kind of laughed and like, oh, this looks kind of goofy or whatever. But as soon as you saw somebody swing a tennis racket with a thing in their hand, everyone got it.
Yeah.
Everybody got it and everybody bought it.
Yes.
With the Wii U, they have much more challenging path ahead of them with trying to explain asymmetrical play. So I can be playing, and they showed a whole bunch of different concepts. I can be playing, like there was one Luigi's Mansion or something like that, where you're running through a mansion and you're trying to bust ghosts with, and everyone playing on the screen using their Wii remotes, just playing like a normal game, look like a kind of like a Pac-Man type game, mm-hmm. where they're walking through and they got little flashlights and they're trying to find the ghost. One player is playing only on this tablet, this Wii U tablet,
which is their own proprietary, I can say.
Yes.
Piece of gear.
That's right. And yeah. And it's got little joysticks in the corner and little buttons and all this. It looks like a controller on the outside of it, but in the middle, it's just a big screen. And they're playing the same game, but they're the ghost. And everyone on the screen watching on the television can't see the ghost unless they can shine a flashlight. But me as the ghost playing on this little Wii U tablet, I see everything. And so I'm trying to capture and sneak up behind all these players. So that's kind of an example of a asymmetrical gameplay.
So that second screen can be used in a variety of different ways, but one of the ways is one of the challenges if you're playing, say, Madden football or something, is you can see each other calling your plays. If you have a second screen that you can call your plays on, you can be calling your plays on your little slate there, and then you have the ability to...
Sports is perfect, pitching a baseball,
you can choose.
And then they showed a scene where not only did you pitch it and secretly, but when they hit it, you all of a sudden take the Wii tablet and throw it into the kind of not throw it but push it into the air looking for the ball that was hit, and you literally have to move around and try to find the ball in the air and catch it.
That's going to be trouble.
I
can tell right now. I was just seeing Jay thrashing around my studio as he was miming the process, thinking lamps and
falling off the couch
and chandeliers with tall people like you are going to be just shattered.
I gotta say though, as much as they dropped the ball in making this super exciting, I'm still really excited for it. Just for the concept. Well, I'm a gamer.
So why did they drop the ball? Why are people saying that Nintendo dropped the ball on this?
Well, it's all software, right? So there was no humongous title. Sure, there was a couple of Mario titles. A new Mario for the 3DS, so that's fine. But there was a Mario Wii U Mario game. Okay, cool. But it didn't really leverage.
How much does the Wii U cost?
Nobody knows.
So did Nintendo maybe also miss the thing here? Maybe Wii U should have just been an iPad app?
I don't know. I mean,
see that? I'm looking at that going, how many tablets am I going to need at home? And yeah. I've got an iPad, and so does 80% of the universe. And the other 20% has an Android tablet.
Yeah.
Where is that Wii tablet going to fit in?
I don't know. It's interesting you say there was a one game at the E3 called Watch Dogs, mm-hmm. and it stole the show as far as surprises. No one saw this coming. It's a next-gen type game. Well, it's a current game, but it looks like a next-gen game. Like, it looks fantastic. And it's all about hacking things and whatnot, but it literally can use a tablet, not a proprietary tablet, your tablet, and on it, you can, a second player can help by hacking some of the traffic as you're driving and do all these extra stuff. So it's like added.
This is the game where the guy has the super phone type
yes,
thing?
Yes, and you can hack everything in the world, in the city.
What platform is that playing
on? Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, maybe the Wii U, we're not sure.
Okay, but that was being showcased, not released yet. Who's making that?
I can't remember.
Okay. I know. I heard about this game and that it is a very different look. What is the future? Like, can these guys go another year without refreshing the hardware?
Well, I mean, gaming is gaming. I mean, look at how long the Wii has lasted on standard definition graphics.
Yeah.
And I mean, sure, it's trailing off now, and it's now at the bottom of the three. It's not selling nearly as much as it used to, but it sold a bajillion with standard definition graphics. The Wii U will be Nintendo's first foray into high definition graphics.
Okay, so it is an HD.
It still is about gameplay.
Is it 720 or 1080? It's 720.
It will be 1080. Yeah.
It will be 1080. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It still is about gameplay. So, you know what I mean? Looks like Mario doesn't have to be super crazy graphics, but it's once you start getting into the Halos and those kind of games where people just love all the detail and graphics.
Yeah. Well, I've. And the other thing that I think could be causing them issues is PC gaming seems to be on the rise.
Well, I mean, you know, Blizzard just launched Diablo 3, and that's just taking the world by storm.
And I've just, 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, I downloaded Diablo 3 finally. I played the previous Diablos with my son, and I was a big fan of the franchise, and I think they did it right.
Well, that's the thing about Blizzard. I mean, Blizzard's kind of like the Pixar of the video game world, right? They're 100% hit rate.
Yeah,
everything they make
took
is
forever.
Amazing.
I mean, how long were we waiting for Diablo 3 from Diablo 2? Is it 8 years? 9 years?
I think 10, actually. I think actually 10 years.
10 years. Yep. I can't believe I'm that old and I'm still playing games.
Yeah.
But they did. They honored their legacy. Yep. The characters, the play is similar, but it is very modern as far as its feel. But it's also really fun. It's also multi-platform. I've downloaded it on my Mac. My friends are playing on the PC. My son in university is playing on whatever.
Sold over 2 million already.
2 million already in 3 weeks.
Yep.
4 weeks.
Yep.
And there's already a whole ecosystem being built around it.
And they've set it up such that there's going to be expansions and things you can buy. And there's already a side market, like a black market, where you can buy extra weapons and stuff like that.
But is there a natural rhythm? Because if we look back to the last time when Diablo 2 was out, it had a similar kind of success.
Yep.
But then shortly thereafter, like 2 years later, was when the
Lord of Destruction.
Xbox 360... Oh. And maybe 3 years later was the Xbox 360 and PlayStation, or maybe it was the Xbox. The original Xbox was released. But all of a sudden, console gaming had its zenith. It kind of rose and with Halo and some of those other games and Modern Warfare and all those other ones. It was Modern Warfare 1, World of...
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, that's the one. So those ones kind of really hit and they elevated the Xbox and the PlayStation.
I mean, you know, Call of Duties and stuff, they'll still sell like anywhere from 7 to 12 million units. So it's, you know, you can't really say console gaming is dead. It still has its huge hits in the area.
It's just not as exciting to talk about.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I'm a huge gamer and I haven't played a game in a while, you know? Like it's
Now so what were the other big, so other than I almost said iTunes U, Wii U, everybody's following on the same letter path, the Wii U, what were the other things that kind of caught your attention at?
Well, it'd be the games, and what I'm excited about, sure, there's sequels, and everyone loves all the different, you know, whether it's Assassin's Creed 3 or a new Star Wars 1313, it's not really a sequel, but it's part of a franchise, obviously.
Is that the 1,313th Star Wars sequel?
Kind of, maybe that's an in-joke of why it was called that. Halo 4, of course, a big one, but I actually especially like when they launch new IPs, internet properties, intellectual properties, where it's brand new and no one's ever heard of it before, like the Watch Dogs we just mentioned. There's just a whole bunch of those that are just, to me, exciting. Unfinished Swan, this weird game where everything's kind of white and you walk around and you throw black paintballs all over the place to try to find your way around. And it's just, you have to explore the area. Just really weird, fun, interesting games. The Last of Us, huge game that everyone's really looking forward to. Just got delayed to 2013, but the AI in that looks so great. Third-person action adventure game. Really exciting.
And was there a lot of gaming at E3 that was not on the computer console but focused on the mobility platforms? Does it kind of delve into that space?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely a few of the portable
Zynga was there?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. And what's that one with a sword?
Fruit Ninja?
Infinity Blade.
Okay, because Fruit Ninja's fun. You toss fruit there, you got to chop it up. That's
not the kind of crowd that E3 generates, but yeah. Yeah.
So what's
Infinity Blade? Have you seen that's a big one? Then there was already Infinity Blade 2 out, but now this Infinity Blade Dungeon has been announced at E3, and it's more of it's actually kind of Diablo-esque, actually. So you might want to download an iPad game, yeah.
An iPad type game. The other question that I have is, ahead of Microsoft's announcement yesterday about the Surface tablet, there was a lot of speculation on what they might be announcing, and I was doing a little bit of reading on some people's thought process of what was happening with the Xbox 360, because I've always liked the Xbox.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite of the gaming consoles. And when we look at the technical capabilities of the Xbox 360, Microsoft is missing a ton of opportunity with this particular platform. I mean, because it can do so much more than play games. I mean, we know it's a DVD player, but it can replace your media server in your home. Yep. It could be a Sling box. It could replace Apple TV. It could be, it obviously is a DVD player. It just has so much more potential. Do you think, in your wildest dreams, that Microsoft stepping away from having other manufacturers with their Surface tablet might just decide that they're going to really up the ante with the Xbox 360 in the next, whatever the sequel to the Xbox 360 is?
Yeah, I think, they've always been planning to make the Xbox 360 more of a entertainment hub as opposed to a gaming machine. But the gaming is what sells it. And then now that it's in your home, hey, did you know you can get Netflix on Xbox all this kind of stuff?
And they shouldn't be saying, did you know? Yeah. They should be saying, get it for this.
I know. And PS3 and Xbox both can do all these cool things. But you know what? I think they're very poor interfaces. To navigate and try to rent a movie on PlayStation 3, it's cumbersome, it's frustrating.
That's where second screen can come in for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think that we're going to have to look for that. I think I hope the
Surface
consoles,
integrates with the new Xbox. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and I hope that they don't give us proprietary pieces. I think Nintendo is just, I think it's ultimately going to be a mistake for them. Because
I hope not.
Well, I think
I'm a Nintendo
be.
Fanboy, so I'm...
Well, yeah, I've got the Wii at home, and the kids like it, and I enjoy playing it every once in a while, when we just sit down and have fun on it. So, I've certainly got nice warm and fuzzies about the whole Nintendo, all of their cornerstone characters and stuff. But bottom line is, I think that I don't think they paid attention to what's happening in the rest of the world, ultimately, because it would have been so easy for them to make it an app, and if they made it an app... Man, oh man, the world's open to you. And then people are going to buy the console. Now it is, I don't know what it's going to cost, but it's going to have to be an extra $120 over what they were going to charge, minimum, maybe $200 or so more than what they were originally going to get to pay for that tablet. And it's that tablet, it might not be a one-trick pony, but let's face it, it's not going to have Apple's ecosystem, and it won't have Microsoft's ecosystem of apps around it.
I know.
So there we go. Okay.
Cool.
Jake Cormier is my expert on all things gaming. We will have, you don't have too many links, but we'll have links to the games that we talked about. Thanks for filling us in the world of E3.
My pleasure as always.
I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Colin Smith joins me. Colin and I go way back to the earliest days of, I think, my very first TV show ever. Was I the start of your stellar media career, Colin?
That was it. That was my first appearance, too.
Yeah. Now, I think that when we used to do Dotto on Data, in the small TV studio, the live weekend show and radio show, that was probably when you started doing stuff with me. And that's got to be like 1835 that we actually began.
Yeah, I think so.
And I remember back then, you were the guy that was, of all of the Adobe employees that I knew, you were the guy that was most excited to work for Adobe. And I don't think that's changed. I think that you are still the most excited guy to work for Adobe on the planet.
Yeah, you know, it is 15 years now. I just celebrated my anniversary, and it's exciting mainly because things just keep getting more incredible all the time. The stuff that used to be in the world of high-end filmmakers is now on the desktop for anybody.
Yeah, and that is and that's due to the evolutions in computer and software, and Adobe, of course, right at the heart of all of the creative software tools. And just this last couple of months, Adobe made a profound shift in how software is being sold and distributed to its users by releasing the Creative Cloud. Can you explain it to us?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's important to mention that you can still buy the product away from the Creative Cloud. So if somebody still wants the box product, they can get that. But what the Creative Cloud is, it's really a digital hub where you can explore, create, share, deliver your work, and you basically pay a one price per month, and you get all of the master collection to download, everything for video, print, design, web, all of the Adobe applications.
Now, let's kind of put it in perspective. To get to purchase a license for the same amount of software at retail, what are we talking about your total investment would be?
I think it's around $2,500 U.S. Okay, for Master Collection.
And so that would give you, to install on your own computer, a license for all of the software. The
right.
Creative Cloud is about $30 a month, and that gives you access to all the tools.
Yeah, all the tools. And that $30 a month is for current CS customers. So if you have Creative Suite 3 all the way up to 5.5, it's $30 a month for the first year. And then after that, it'll be $50 a month. And these are all U.S. prices. So
okay,
take that into account. And students, their price is $29.99 a month all the time. So they get the exact same applications, but they get them at student pricing.
And this and the license is it's the quintessential software for service model. So you're always going to have the latest, most updated version. You never have to worry about upgrading or spending more money. You put the money in your budget and as spending it each month, and you never have to worry about dropping another $2,500 to purchase being several versions behind, which could be an issue.
Yeah, and there's another thing that is really hard to kind of understand. It's there's a thing called revenue recognition, which is something put in place by U.S. lawmakers, and it prevents all software makers from adding significant features and updates after a certain period. So if you launch your product in May, then for 3 months you can add new features, but after that you can't. So normally what Adobe will do is we will take those new features, put them on the shelf, and wait till the full release the following year. Well, this is the first time we can get past that. With Creative Cloud, we are allowed to offer Creative Cloud members new features and functionality all throughout the year.
That's got to be a huge, and especially for a product like Photoshop, you know, which is still the bellwether for all photo editing applications. You guys are always adding new little filters, new little tweaks, new little ways to do things, and so people are going to have access to those as soon as they're released.
Yeah, and this is all new for us too. So we're going to see how it pans out. But there will be a time when a boxed customer will have to wait for the following year to get the exact same features that a Creative Cloud member has.
So if I take a look at the suite of tools in Creative Cloud, it's a lot of software.
It absolutely is. I mean, if you know even a quarter of these applications, you basically can write your ticket into business out there, because they do cover everything from imaging, photography, design, web, video, okay, audio, visual effects, story writing, you name it. It's up there.
So we're just going to do quick one word or one sentence descriptions of each product. Adobe Photoshop, which is, of course, photo editing that everybody else tries to be. Illustrator,
right,
for doing vector graphics and logos, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Photoshop Lightroom.
Lightroom is coming. So Lightroom is coming soon, not part of it yet, but it will be coming. And Lightroom is not only for tweaking photos, but also for cataloging photo. It has a really powerful cataloging engine in it.
Which is so important to commercial photographers and increasingly important to amateur photographers, because we've taken so many pictures now with our digital cameras that creating some sort of logical filing system, as we all know, it becomes a nightmare. Next, InDesign, which is for designing websites.
No, InDesign. It's kind of crossing over. InDesign, its roots were for print publishing, but now what we're finding is that InDesign is also being made for a lot of the books that you're reading on iPads, and people are selling through the Apple App Store. So the major publishers that are now embracing digital versions of their magazines, they're all using InDesign to create that.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Now, Adobe Muse, that's what product I haven't heard of before.
Oh, Muse is absolutely cool. I mean, I was a big Go Live user, and then that's gone. And, you know, before that, several different type of WYSIWYG programs. And now we have a really powerful program in Dreamweaver. But embarrassed to say that Dreamweaver's too much for me.
That is for website design.
Yeah, really high-end professional web design. And Muse is for everyone else, namely me. It's drag and drop. It's a very simple design, but it comes with lots of really cool widgets. So if you want to design a beautiful HTML5 slideshow with nice transitioning pages and rollover thingies, and you don't know how to program that, you basically drag a widget over. And I redesigned my town website in, you know, just about a half an hour of dragging stuff over from old HTML pages that I have. So it creates HTML5 pages, which means they're going to work perfect on any iOS device too.
And we could talk for hours and hours about what Acrobat is. Now they're even making it more confusing because it's called Acrobat X Pro.
Yeah.
Is that 10? Is that 10? Is the X?
That's version 10, yes.
Holy cow. And you know what? Acrobat is obviously for PDF management, but it's so much more. It is we won't make you explain that. Flash Professional is for
Flash has gone through some changes recently. I mean, we all know Flash is creating very interactive applications and websites, but Flash can also output right alongside our regular Flash Swift output. Everything it can output now is HTML5, which means it's going to play well with Android, with iOS, on desktop, Mac, and Windows, and everywhere.
And that's a big step. For the development community, moving over to HTML5 from Flash it can be argued one way or the other whether or not it's a step in the right direction, but it's a step that's been necessitated by Apple's insistence that it not incorporate Flash in any of its iOS devices.
Right.
So here, HTML5 now carries forward. So moving ahead, of course, Dreamweaver for web design. What is Adobe Edge?
Edge is kind of, again, like a Flash creation tool that's very, very easy to use, and it spits out HTML5. So you're designing this interactive timeline-based, it could be a website or an application, and the whole thing is exported out as HTML5.
Wow. Fireworks?
Fireworks is the Photoshop of the web, so it has a ton of tools specifically designed for creating web graphics, buttons, rollovers, and all the JavaScript that goes along with it.
And then, of course, we get into the video world with Premiere Pro and After Effects and Audition.
Mm-hmm. Premiere Pro, of course, for video editing, used in a lot of the movies that you're seeing these days. After Effects, motion graphics. You can't watch 5 minutes of television commercials without seeing After Effects being used. And Audition, a fantastic application for editing audio, multi-track and fixing noise reduction, things like that.
Then another app that I haven't heard of, which is SpeedGrade.
Yeah, SpeedGrade is a new purchase from Adobe. We bought a company last year called Iridos, and SpeedGrade, get ready for this. Before we bought it, it was $45,000 to buy a copy of SpeedGrade.
Oh, well, so at $50 a month, it's a bargain.
Yes.
What does it do?
It's high-end feature film color correction and grading, conforming and finishing. Okay. It was up there competing with applications that are worth like $500,000. So it was a bargain at $45,000. Now at $50 a month, it's
stupid.
Perfect.
Good. And then you've got Adobe Prelude, which, again, is the one that's new to me.
Yep. It's a brand new application. This is a 1.0 that we basically designed it along with the BBC and CNN. And It's based on cameras that don't use videotape. They use tapeless media, so they use cards.
Okay.
And it helps you ingest that or import it into the computer, add metadata, and do quick rough cuts and things of that sort.
Oh, that's really useful, especially for documentary filmmakers, that sort of stuff. Anybody that's doing any tapeless video work. And then I see there's a whole series of other little tools that I think they're more just utilities for like Adobe's Media Encoder, which you'd obviously be using for taking your files and then outporting them to web-friendly or other formats.
Yes.
But there's also a couple, Photoshop Touch. What is that?
Photoshop Touch is one of our iPad or tablet applications. Some of these are available. Eventually, all will be Android and iOS. Some are just one or the other. But all of the touch applications are for tablets. So Photoshop Touch is very much like a tablet version of Photoshop. Proto, to me, is one of the most amazing pieces of technology I've ever seen in my life. It's made for people who create websites. And the idea is this, is that a lot of times people will sit down and they'll do a sketch of a website. They'll draw a rectangle at the top and say, this is where my banner is, and then some buttons down the side and an image here and a video goes here. And they're doing it usually with a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. Proto does the same thing, except you're using your finger on a tablet, and it interprets what you're doing and converts it into a placeholder. For instance, if you draw a rectangle and you know the typical play button in YouTube looks like a sideways triangle. If you draw that, Proto says, oh, you must mean a video. And it sticks a placeholder in there. When you're finished doing your prototype, that's where it gets its name, you send that to Dreamweaver and you continue working with the code that you created by basically sketching with your fingers.
That's cool. That sounds very cool. Okay. Wow. So all of this is included in the Creative Cloud.
The touch apps at the bottom of the screen that you'll see on the Adobe website, the Creative Cloud part. So they're purchased separately, the touch apps.
Okay, so they are separately. But bottom line, if you're involved in any of the graphic arts development production community, Creative Cloud is certainly something that you have to take a good, serious look at. And as you say, any individual that masters more than a third of them probably has their ticket punched to a long and fruitful career.
Absolutely.
Good. Colin Smith is the I've lost your job description now. Senior Solutions Consultant. That's a great name. That pretty much opens the door for you to do everything at Adobe,
That's
Colin.
That's right, yep.
And you are loving it. Colin Smith with Adobe. All for more information, adobe.com. And also, I'm going to put a link in our site. Colin does a fairly regular feature on Adobe TV where it's called No Stupid Questions.
That's right.
And because there are there are stupid questions. And so now our listeners are going to try and come up with stupid questions and let you know them.
Right. Excellent.
It's a challenge. Colin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Colin Smith joins me. Colin and I go way back to the earliest days of, I think, my very first TV show ever. Was I the start of your stellar media career, Colin?
That was it. That was my first appearance, too.
Yeah. Now, I think that when we used to do Dotto on Data, in the small TV studio, the little live weekend show and radio show, that was probably when you started doing stuff with me. And that's got to be like 1835 that we actually began.
Yeah, I think so.
And I remember back then, you were the guy that was, of all of the Adobe employees that I knew, you were the guy that was most excited to work for Adobe. And I don't think that's changed. I think that you are still the most excited guy to work for Adobe on the planet.
It is 15 years now. I just celebrated my anniversary. And it's exciting mainly because things just keep getting more incredible all the time. The stuff that used to be in the world of high-end filmmakers is now on the desktop for anybody.
Yeah, and that is and that's due to the evolutions in computer and software. And Adobe, of course, right at the heart of all of the creative software tools. And just this last couple of months, Adobe made a profound shift in how software is being sold and distributed to its users by releasing the Creative Cloud. Can you explain it to us?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's important to mention that you can still buy the product away from the Creative Cloud. So if somebody still wants the box product, they can get that. But what the Creative Cloud is, it's really a digital hub where you can explore, create, share, deliver your work, and you basically pay a one price per month, and you get all of the master collection to download, everything for video, print, design, web, all of the Adobe applications.
Now, let's kind of put it in perspective. To get to purchase a license for the same amount of software at retail, what are we talking about your total investment would be?
I think it's around $2,500 US for master collection.
And so that would give you, to install on your own computer, a license for all of the software. The
right.
Creative Cloud is about $30 a month, and that gives you access to all the tools.
Yeah, all the tools. And that $30 a month is for current CS customers. So if you have Creative Suite 3 all the way up to 5.5, it's $30 a month for the first year, and then after that it'll be $50 a month. And these are all U.S. prices, so
okay.
Take that into account. And students, their price is $29.99 a month all the time. So they get the exact same applications, but they get them at student pricing.
And this and the license is it's the quintessential software for service model. So you're always going to have the latest, most updated version. You never have to worry about upgrading or spending more money. You put the money in your budget and as spending it each month, and you never have to worry about dropping another $2,500 to purchase being several versions behind, which could be an issue.
Yeah, and there's another thing that is really hard to kind of understand. It's there's a thing called revenue recognition, which is something put in place by U.S. lawmakers, and it prevents all software makers from adding significant features and updates after a certain period. So if you launch your product in May, then for 3 months you can add new features, but after that you can't. So normally what Adobe will do is we will take those new features, put them on the shelf, and wait till the full release the following year. Well, this is the first time we can get past that. With Creative Cloud, we are allowed to offer Creative Cloud members new features and functionality all throughout the year.
That's got to be a huge, and especially for a product like Photoshop, you know, which is still the bellwether for all photo editing applications. You guys are always adding new little filters, new little tweaks, new little ways to do things, and so people are going to have access to those as soon as they're released.
Yeah, and this is all new for us too. So we're going to see how it pans out. But there will be a time when a boxed customer will have to wait for the following year to get the exact same features that a Creative Cloud member has.
So if I take a look at the suite of tools in Creative Cloud, it's a lot of software.
It absolutely is. I mean, if you know even a quarter of these applications, you basically can write your ticket into business out there, because they do cover everything from imaging, photography, design, web, video, okay. audio, visual effects, story writing, you name it. It's up there.
So we're just going to do quick one word or one sentence descriptions of each product. Adobe Photoshop, which is, of course, photo editing that everybody else tries to be. Illustrator for doing vector graphics and logos, that sort of stuff.
Yep. And
Photoshop Lightroom?
Lightroom is coming. So Lightroom is
coming soon,
not part of it yet, but it will be coming. And Lightroom is not only for tweaking photos, but also for cataloging photo. It has a really powerful cataloging engine in it.
Which is so important to commercial photographers and increasingly important to amateur photographers, because we've taken so many pictures now with our digital cameras that creating some sort of logical filing system, as we all know, it becomes a nightmare. Next, InDesign, which is for designing websites.
No, InDesign. It's kind of crossing over. InDesign its roots were for print publishing, but now what we're finding is that InDesign is also being made for a lot of the books that you're reading on iPads, and people are selling through the Apple App Store. So the major publishers that are now embracing digital versions of their magazines, they're all using InDesign to create that.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Now, Adobe Muse, that's what product I haven't heard of before.
Oh, Muse is absolutely cool. I mean, I was a big Go Live user, and then that's gone. And, you know, before that, several different type of WYSIWYG programs. And now we have a really powerful program in Dreamweaver. But embarrassed to say that Dreamweaver is too much for me.
That is for website design.
Yeah, really high-end professional web design. And Muse is for everyone else, namely me. It's drag and drop. It's a very simple design, but it comes with lots of really cool widgets. So if you want to design a beautiful HTML5 slideshow with nice transitioning pages and rollover thingies, and you don't know how to program that, you basically drag a widget over. And I redesigned my town website in, you know, just about a half an hour of dragging stuff over from old HTML pages that I have. So it creates HTML5 pages, which means they're going to work perfect on any iOS device too.
And we could talk for hours and hours about what Acrobat is. Now they're even making it more confusing because it's called Acrobat X Pro.
Yeah.
Is that 10? Is that 10? Is the X?
That's version 10, yes.
Holy cow. And you know what? Acrobat is obviously for PDF management, but it's so much more. It is we won't make you explain that. Flash Professional
Flash has gone through some changes recently. I mean, we all know Flash is creating very interactive applications and websites, but Flash can also output right alongside our regular Flash Swift output. Everything it can output now is HTML5, which means it's going to play well with Android, with iOS, on desktop, Mac, and Windows, and everywhere.
And that's a big step for the development community. Moving over to HTML5 from Flash it can be argued one way or the other whether or not it's a step in the right direction, but it's a step that's been necessitated by Apple's insistence that it not incorporate Flash in any of its iOS devices.
Right.
So here HTML5 now carries forward. So moving ahead, of course, Dreamweaver for web design. What is Adobe Edge?
Edge is kind of, again, like a Flash creation tool that's very, very easy to use, and it spits out HTML5. So you're designing this interactive timeline-based, basically, it could be a website or an application, and the whole thing is exported out as HTML5.
Wow. Fireworks?
Fireworks is the Photoshop of the web, so it has a ton of tools specifically designed for creating web graphics, buttons, rollovers, and all the JavaScript that goes along with it.
And then, of course, we get into the video world with Premiere Pro and After Effects and Audition.
Mm-hmm. Premiere Pro, of course, for video editing, used in a lot of the movies that you're seeing these days. After Effects, motion graphics. You can't watch 5 minutes of television commercials without seeing After Effects being used. And Audition, a fantastic application for editing audio, multi-track and fixing noise reduction, things like that.
Then another app that I haven't heard of, which is SpeedGrade.
Yeah, SpeedGrade is a new purchase from Adobe. We bought a company last year called Iridos, and SpeedGrade, get ready for this. Before we bought it, it was $45,000 to buy a copy of SpeedGrade.
Oh, well, so at $50 a month, it's a bargain.
Yes.
What does it do?
It's high-end feature film color correction and grading, conforming and finishing. Okay. It was up there competing with applications that are worth like $500,000. So it was a bargain at $45,000. Now at $50 a month, it's
stupid.
Perfect.
Good. And then you've got Adobe Prelude, which, again, is the one that's new to me.
Yep, it's a brand new application. This is a 1.0 that basically designed it along with the BBC and CNN. And it's based on cameras that don't use videotape. They use tapeless media, so they use cards.
Okay.
And it helps you ingest that or import it into the computer, add metadata, and do quick rough cuts and things of that sort.
Oh, that's really useful, especially for documentary filmmakers, that sort of stuff. Anybody that's doing any discless or tapeless video work. And then I see there's a whole series of other little tools that I think they're more just utilities for like Adobe's Media Encoder, which you'd obviously be using for taking your files and then outporting them to web friendly or other formats.
Yes.
But there's also a Photoshop Touch. What is that?
Photoshop Touch is one of our iPad or tablet applications. Some of these are available. Eventually, all will be Android and iOS. Some are just one or the other, but all of the touch applications are for tablets. So Photoshop Touch is very much like a tablet version of Photoshop. Proto to me is one of the most amazing pieces of technology I've ever seen in my life. It's made for people who create websites. And the idea is this, is that a lot of times people will sit down and they'll do a sketch of a website. They'll draw a rectangle at the top and say, this is where my banner is, and then some buttons down the side and an image here and a video goes here. And they're doing it usually with a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. Proto does the same thing, except you're using your finger on a tablet, and it interprets what you're doing and converts it into a placeholder. For instance, if you draw a rectangle or a rectangle, and you know the typical play button in YouTube looks like a sideways triangle. If you draw that, Proto says, "Oh, you must mean a video." And it sticks a placeholder in there. When you're finished doing your prototype, that's where it gets its name, you send that to Dreamweaver and you continue working with the code that you created by basically sketching with your fingers.
That's cool. That sounds very cool. Okay. Wow. So all of this is included in the Creative Cloud.
The touch apps at the bottom of the screen that you'll see on the Adobe website, the Creative Cloud part. So they're purchased separately, the touch apps.
Okay, so they are separately. But bottom line, if you're involved in any of the graphic arts development production community, Creative Cloud is certainly something that you have to take a good, serious look at. And as you say, any individual that masters more than a third of them probably has their ticket punched to a long and fruitful career.
Absolutely.
Good. Colin Smith is the I've lost your job description now. Senior Solutions Consultant. That's a great name. That pretty much opens the door for you to do everything at Adobe,
That's
Colin.
That's right, yep.
And you are loving it. Colin Smith with Adobe. All for more information, adobe.com. And also, I'm going to put a link in our site. Colin does a fairly regular feature on Adobe TV where it's called No Stupid Questions.
That's right.
And because there are no stupid – see, there are stupid questions. And so now our listeners are going to try and come up with stupid questions and let you know them.
Right. Excellent.
It's a challenge. Colin, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me now, Theo Horsdahl from London Drugs. How are you keeping, Theo?
Doing well. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing just great. I was looking on the London Drugs nerd blog, and I saw that there's 5 gadgets that you won't give up.
I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, I can't do without a certain amount of gadgets in my life, and I'm ashamed to admit it, but at the same time, when I started thinking about it, these are things I use every day. I take it for granted every day, and you just take one of them away, and I think my life would cave in and fall apart.
Okay. So give me the list. And you know what? I'm going to give you something on my list each step of the way. So what's your number one on your list?
I think the number one on my list, with everything I use, you need power. And with electricity as being as it is, it's sometimes unreliable. And but not only that, is electricity is sometimes inconsistent. So I use something called UPS, and what UPS stands for, abbreviation, is an uninterruptible power supply. So really, at the core of it is I'm literally plugging into a battery 100% of the time, and the battery's plugged into the wall and charging. So any interruption in power or fluctuation power, what they call brownouts, is only going to impact the charging ability of that battery, but everything else I plug into it is getting a 100% clean and constant supply of power. So, my big plasma screen or my computer, all these sensitive electronics, will never ever have a problem. I have a complete confidence. And if should a, you know, an electrical storm hit or whatever, it also has surge capability. And you know, if it loses charging capability, then I have, hey, I have 10 minutes to find another place to plug in.
So it gives you about 10 minutes. 10 minutes of power.
Yeah, it depends on which. The capacity of the battery. Mm-hmm. It also depends what you plug in. Most of the UPS uninterruptible power supplies have a couple of plugs for uninterrupted power, and then a couple of plugs for surge only power. And obviously, the more you plug into those plugs, the more power it draws. But you know, generally speaking, all I really need is a couple of a couple of minutes of power so that I can shut things off. And as a matter of fact, most of them have a USB cable you plug into your computer. And in the event of a loss in power, it actually triggers your computer to shut itself down and shut everything else down that's attached to it. So,
because
you're not at home and that happens, you have a fail-safe.
Yeah, we just so often leave our computer running all the time anyway, so that's a good idea. And how much do they cost?
Well, they're not expensive at all. In the $40 range. UPS has started about $70.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit cheap. They used to be quite a bit more money. I can remember back in the day, but $70, not too bad. Okay.
I think battery technology has really come. Absolutely. Number two on my list would be also on the theme of power, would be a USB charger, a power charger. I think everything I own now, with the exception of my laptop, uses USB for power. So that USB power is ubiquitous. The only thing that changes is really the connector that connects to your phone or your tablet or whatever.
Yeah.
And even then, there are only three or four different cables. So those little power portable USB chargers, I probably have four or five or six of them scattered throughout my house and at work. And whenever I need power, I just plug in a USB port and I'm off to the races.
That's actually what my notebook has become for me is a USB charger half the time.
Most of the notebooks even when you turn your power on and your notebook off, it usually leaves power on one of those USB ports to plug and charge
your phone and stuff like that
when your computer's turned off.
Because I hate carrying all those cables with me. I hate carrying.
You know what? Absolutely. Number three on my list. Now, maybe I'm a fogey or maybe I'm cheap or a little bit of both, but I don't have a new enough car that it came with a Bluetooth connector to the car. Mm-hmm. So these little Bluetooth speakers, which is basically a mic and a speaker with a battery connected to it, put it on your advisor, your dash, every time your phone rings, instead of it using your phone to answer your call, which is illegal, of course, now, it just pipes it right through to your Bluetooth speaker, and you can even voice activate answer, so I can just literally say answer, and now I'm talking on the phone. I think before I had it, I really took for granted, little Bluetooth headsets or wired headsets even back a number of years ago. Now it's just a matter of, I don't even think about it. It's now a constant in my car.
In our family, we've got one of each. We've got Shan has a Bluetooth visor in her car, and I've got the headset. I've got I use the Plantronics Voyager Pro headset, and that is one of my indispensable devices. Not for talking on the phone in the car, although it does have that potential. For me, it's because it's got when I'm just walking around the house and doing stuff, I like to be able to, I like to be hands-free when I'm talking on the phone. But I love the A2DPH streaming because I listen to audiobooks all the time.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so I'm so it's
I should also mention that even some GPS units, global positioning satellite in your car that show the maps and whatnot, a lot of those now are coming with Bluetooth audio. Can't really say if I'm aware of whether the audio is as good as those speakers, but it kind of points to the fact that a lot of people don't have Bluetooth in their car, and there's easy ways to do it now.
So the pricing of the Bluetooth headset, the Bluetooth speakers, is around $100.
Yeah, generally around $100. Sometimes you can see them on sale for around $80, but that's pretty much how much you budget for a pretty decent one.
And so, but if you spend twice that, you can also have a GPS unit.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, perfect.
Number four on my list, personally, iPad. I started with the iPad 2. I didn't actually ever have an iPad, the original iPad. So starting with the iPad 2, it has now become indispensable to me for a lot of different things, from work, for personal. I carry it around. I carry a little messenger bag, a man bag, whatever you want to call it. I take it everywhere. I have a keyboard for it, a Bluetooth keyboard. Sometimes I use a keyboard, sometimes I don't. But that's become an indispensable tool for me.
I agree. Now, are you on the iPad 3 yet? Have you upgraded?
No. You know, for me, maybe I'm again, maybe going back to the cheap comment. For me, I have an iPad 2. I can't see a reason to upgrade when they have a perfectly good iPad 2. I don't use it really for photography or anything like that. So for me, I don't really have a need for any of the additional horsepower or whatever the new iPad has.
I
will replace. I mean, it's inevitable.
I've started avoiding the computer department of your stores because I always look at the iPad 3 there and think how pretty the image is on it. But I like you, I can't justify upgrading for my iPad 2 right now.
Yeah, and I think until they, maybe they add some functionality increases, maybe add the Siri to it or different things like that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll wait till the next one.
Yeah, the next one will be probably pretty compelling.
Sure. And then on the rounding out the top five, again, I got to stick with Apple again. I personally use an iPhone. Now, I think you can probably say smartphone for number five, but I have made my experiences with iPhone. The nice thing for me now using iPhone and the iPad is I really understand Apple's sort of ecosystem relative to cloud. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing for me is I have kids, and when they take pictures, usually they're pictures of their feet or whatever, those pictures will show up on my iPad, they'll show up on my desktop. So it's kind of nice to have technology that I can put in my pocket with an iPhone that I can carry around that's sort of become, a single tool, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and it's the one that, those last two items that you talk about are why we are calling this era the post-PC era. Because...
Well, I'll interrupt you, though. For me, when I say gadgets, my top five gadgets, I honestly don't, I can't see a replacement for my computer. I'm not quite there yet. But for me, I found that the iPad and the iPhone have now become sort of a triad. My notebook, I definitely still need my notebook. Those are nice when I'm portable. My notebook, I think now I'm using it as a more of a stationary device.
Now, are you on a Mac notebook now?
I have both. So okay. I have a Windows 7 notebook that I use primarily for work. And then for photographs and whatnot, I happen to use a Mac. Simply because it's easy to for other family members to use the Mac for the photo. It's very easy to use.
And you're talking about that ecosystem. Yeah. That's with your smartphone and your tablet, it really does kind of all fit together quite nicely.
Yeah, it's a great system.
Got it. So there's your five things you can't do without: UPS, USB power charger, Bluetooth car speaker, iPad, and iPhone.
And you had mentioned you have one to add to the list.
Well, I just commented on the earpiece. I've found that I've used that Plantronics Bluetooth headset.
I understand. Okay. Fair
actually, I, it's my second one because my dog Farley decided to chow down on Plantronics headset number one. So now I'm very careful about keeping it out of the dog's reach. Apparently, labradoodles like headsets.
There you go. Or anything else they can fit.
He doesn't chew on too much stuff. That's why I was so scandalized when he ate my headset.
He prefers expensive small gadgets that are
And that's the thing. That Plantronics is like $150, I think. Or maybe even a little bit more. Theo Horsdahl is a technology buyer at London Drugs. Thanks for your time, Theo.
Thank you.
Well, Art, we have pretty much run out of time for today, but I did not ask you. I didn't get a chance to chat with you about the outcome of Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference and the launching of the new MacBook Pros, because I know you're constantly shopping, making the decision of buying your first Mac soon. Did the Retina display MacBook Pro intrigue you enough that you're thinking about it?
This show has turned me into,
Mac fanboy.
Yeah, fanboy, and too broke. Or at least broke if I really want everything that I want. I know that I'm going to be able to use this whatever my MacBook I choose, audio and maybe even video editing. So it's still up in the air.
Yeah,
I'm not looking.
Having had a week now to digest it, I'm not on the MacBook Pro Retina bandwagon. Two reasons. I'm kind of chuffed at Apple for calling it a MacBook Pro because it's not a Pro. Here's the thing. Pros take their computers and tweak them and modify them to make them work for us. So if they want to add a bigger hard disk because they're a video guy, or if they want to add more RAM or whatever, they tweak their hardware. The MacBook Pro, you can't, there's no user replaceable parts. Oh. You can't upgrade the memory because the memory is soldered in. You can't upgrade the hard drive because it's glued in. And it's a proprietary hard drive that nobody else makes. Now, Apple's going to tell us the reason they did this is to make it lighter and more affordable at $2,200. But my then call it a MacBook Air on steroids, but don't call it a Pro. This is kind of, it's got me irritated. I've got a thing.
Steve, calm down. Show's almost over.
So I'm thinking if I'm upgrading, I'm just going to go with the old MacBook Pro. And the old school ones, which are going to be discounted, and I can add, I can upgrade my hard drive, I can add my own SSD, and I can increase the amount of RAM if I choose. Plus, the battery is replaceable. If it should fail, I don't have to go into Apple and get them to take it apart and, under service contract, replace the battery.
Those are wise words.
Yeah, I've given a lot of thought in the last little.
I like the part where you're saving me money.
Yeah, saving money is a good thing. Drop by our website. We've got all of the podcasts of all these shows. Plus, we've got a whole series of new Dotto demo videos where I show you how to get the most out of your technology. It's like a throwback to the old Dotto's Data Cafe, except I'm doing it in my home office. It's awesome.
The one-man studio.
And if you have something special that you want to learn how to do, drop me an email. Drop me an email. And let me know. We have run out of time for this week's show. I am Steve Dotto on behalf of my erstwhile producer, Art Factora. I thank you all for spending this evening with us. We'll see you next week right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.